The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, yes, we are unmasked today. Officially, this is the first day of being unmasked. So the official rules at the moment are that face masks are required only for those people who are unvaccinated, who are in healthcare facilities, people who are on their way to quarantine, and airplane passengers. That is the limit of mask wearing in Israel at the moment. And on the same day, Israel has also decided to reopen the border crossing with Jordan, which has been closed since the start of the pandemic. So two major milestones in escaping from the pandemic today. So we're going to recognize people that we haven't recognized for ages with the masks coming off.
Yeah, I know that I struggle with it, hey? I know that most people are fine, but I'm getting people mixed up with these face masks. I'm just not as good as I thought I would be. I thought this would be an area that I would excel. I've done terribly at it. I'm not.
Well,
yeah.
The other problem is that now that the mask comes off, we go, you used to look younger before, didn't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's going to
get your Botox done before things. You drop the mask. That's what I say. I think it's a good, it's a sensible motto, but absolutely incredible. You know, we are so thick of it in the middle of this third wave that we can't see straight. And, in Israel, they're just removing the masks. It's gone. COVID is a thing
and
of the past.
I think the message is pretty clear. Vaccinate, vaccinate, vaccinate. I think that, you know, if there is one strong message coming out of everything that we've been through, because it wasn't so long ago that we were talking about being in the midst of the third wave and how horrendous it was here too. And we all remember that. It wasn't that long ago. And the main difference between then and now is vaccinations. Mm,
absolutely, absolutely right. Let's talk about the new government handover.
There's so many things to talk about. I mean, one of the things that I wasn't able to talk about yesterday was the drama moments of the vote of confidence that went down in the Knesset on Sunday. And the way that it was conducted was that the secretary of the Knesset read out each individual member of Knesset's name in alphabetical order, and they had to shout out support in favor of or against. That was it. It was 120 names being read out in alphabetical order and a little count being maintained. It was all played out live on TV. The TV was counting up those in favor, those against, obviously in favor of the vote of confidence in the new government or against the vote of confidence in the new government. And we never really saw a gap of more than two or three votes ever really materializing as it was counted up in the 20s, in the 30s, in the 40s, getting to that magical number, which really they were all aiming to get to, which was 61 being the majority of 120. And then in the middle, suddenly we discovered that one of the members of the Knesset was not in the house, was not in the room. What had happened was that two members of the joint list had decided to leave the Knesset room and stand outside. So if they were standing outside, they wouldn't vote when their name was called out in alphabetical order. But they were monitoring the whole procedure such that at the end of the voting, they reappeared in the room. And then those who were absent were allowed to vote, obviously now out of alphabetical order. And once everybody else had voted and they could see what the result was, so they could theoretically influence the way that they vote according to the count that had been tallied up at that point. Very, very sneaky kind of situation that arose. So there were two members of the Arab joint list who had excused themselves, effectively were absent from the vote. And then all of a sudden came this moment when one of the members of Ram, the Arab party, which is actually part of the coalition. I know that originally I'd said that they were going to support the coalition from the outside. That's not the case. They actually are signed up and inside the coalition. One of the members of Ram actually then decided to abstain. Very, very dramatic moment, because there was only 61 seats counted up. And with this abstention, that would bring 60. So we got to the end of the vote and we found the in favors had 60. And the against had 57, and there were two people standing outside the room who hadn't yet voted, who suddenly reappeared. Their names were called again. And it turns out that their strategy was that they didn't necessarily want to vote against Netanyahu. They wanted to be seen to support him. However, they didn't want to support him in a way that would bring down the vote of confidence. So when they realized that 57 votes against had been registered and there were already 60 in favor, they could quite safely say against both of them to bring it up to 59, knowing that their two votes really counted for nothing because the number of 60 had already been achieved with the one abstention. So they voted in favor of Netanyahu, effectively against the motion. 60 votes were counted in favor of the motion, 59 against. That was the end of it, obviously, with the one abstention. Very, very dramatic. Mm. The whole of Israel was watching this with bated breath to see whether the vote would actually pass. That's how close it was.
Incredible. That is absolutely incredible. A lot of comments on social media yesterday as well about the meeting between Netanyahu and Bennett, that there wasn't the normal photo opportunity, handshake. The meeting was only, the handover meeting was only an hour. It didn't look very, very friendly as far as the outgoing prime minister was concerned.
It wasn't even an hour, it was 25 minutes. That was the handover meeting.
Wow.
You want to hand over the country to the incoming prime minister? 25 minutes, that's what you get. Very, very little could obviously be handed over in 25 minutes. And we understand that Netanyahu had also insisted that none of his bureau would be in touch with the incoming Bennett bureau before the vote was held. So there was really almost no handover done between the two sets of the teams of staff that would cover the prime minister, the outgoing prime minister, the incoming prime minister. And we understand that Naftali Bennett went immediately into a meeting with the national security advisor, Meir Ben-Shabbat, who briefed him on national security issues. We also understand that besides going to the president's residence, which Naftali Bennett did with his new government for the usual photo opportunities of the incoming government, that he also visited the grave of his army friend who unfortunately had been killed in the Lebanon war. And he was a fellow soldier of his. He mentioned his wife during the swearing-in ceremony at the Knesset, who apparently was present and had come along to watch Naftali. But this was obviously a very personal and very, very emotional moment for Naftali Bennett, having been elected as prime minister, to go along to one of those colleagues who'd served with him in the army, in the Sayeret Matkal, to visit his grave before he got down to business. And business there was, because the Knesset, the incoming government worked very hard. Yesterday, they already decided that the usual break of more than a month that the Knesset takes during the summertime will be reduced down to 2 weeks. There is too much work to do and no time to holiday this year. And so that already has been decided amongst other decisions that were taken yesterday. So it seems as if though it was very workmanlike indeed, lots and lots of calls from abroad, from all the international leaders to congratulate Naftali Bennett on his election as prime minister. There were a few photo opportunities, but by and large, it was really down to business yesterday, with a lot of ground being covered, all the various ministers being inaugurated into their offices to meet their staff and to begin their work program. And also the Norwegian law was activated. The Norwegian law is that those members of the government who have ministerial positions resign their Knesset seats, so they don't need to be a member of Knesset anymore. And that allows people who are further down the Knesset list in their party to take up their seats in parliament, effectively involving more members of the party in the running of the government and in the running of the country. And there's some quite interesting people who have come in to Knesset yesterday as a result of the activation of the Norwegian law, including Israel's first deaf member of Knesset. And she took up her position yesterday. She will be fighting for the rights of people who are less advantaged in our society, as has been her life work up until now. So a few interesting things that happened yesterday as we bed things down with a new government and the new Knesset as they begin to work.
Absolutely incredible. Really, really just the most amazing feeling of change. But I'm very concerned and very disturbed about by Netanyahu's behavior. I find it really just so appalling and disappointing.
I think a lot of us are disappointed. And, you know, some people call it Trumpesque, harking back to the way in which outgoing President Donald Trump was also reluctant to hand over things in an orderly fashion. Yeah, it does lack some finesse. It does lack some gracious behavior. You know, I think, as I said yesterday, and I'll say again, I think he has served Israel tremendously over many, many years. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that there's any embarrassment or any reason why he should feel badly done by. This is a new government, a new person. It doesn't mean that he doesn't have the opportunity to come back if the nation supports him. I think that in his situation, I would just allow the new government to get on with business. The reality is that they will make their mistakes, and there will certainly be opportunities to capitalize on their mistakes. Just because it's a new government doesn't necessarily mean that it will be a good government. I know that we all have high hopes, and we're feeling some sense of euphoria that this change has taken place because we haven't had another prime minister for so long. But inevitably, there will be mistakes made, there will be missteps, there will be problems that will arise. And, you know, in Netanyahu's shoes, I would be waiting for those issues rather than to try and look like a bad loser, which is what he looks like right
Absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Let's just talk about, we don't have a lot of time, but we do need to talk about this flag march in Jerusalem that's taking place today. What are the latest details of this march?
So this is the march that we know was delayed from Yom Yerushalayim, when the Operation Guardian of the Walls broke out, and we had some security issues. And so this is effectively just a delayed Yom Yerushalayim celebration. Yom Yerushalayim usually coming with a flag march through the streets of Jerusalem, through the Old City. This is the traditional way in which Yom Yerushalayim is celebrated. Unfortunately, earlier this year, we were unable to do that. And so it has been agreed that the flag march will take place today. Instead, that was a decision that was taken last week by outgoing Prime Minister Netanyahu, together with his security cabinet. The one common factor in all of this at the senior government level is Benny Gantz, who continues to be Minister of Defense, as he was in the outgoing government, and he is now in the new government as well. So he is one common factor amongst all of those decisions. He was involved in the decision to put the flag march, to allow it to go ahead today. The route has been changed. It will not go through the Damascus Gate. It will not go through the Muslim Quarter. Instead, it will go into the Old City through the Jaffa Gate. It will circumvent the Muslim Quarter, coming very, very close to the borders of the Muslim Quarter, but not actually go into the Muslim Quarter. The issue is that this has created a lot of attention and a lot of tension as a result of the various people feeling a little threatened by this flag march. First of all, there are those living within the city of Jerusalem who feel that this is an affront to them. Many Arab citizens of Jerusalem have decided that they are going to somehow oppose this, as a result of which security within the city of Jerusalem has been beefed up very, very dramatically. We understand that the incoming government of Naftali Bennett has approved the flag march to take place today. So it's not as if though this is an overhang from the old government, where there was no choice but just to continue. We understand that there was a meeting yesterday that was held with the incoming ministers, and this march has actually been approved by Prime Minister Naftali Bennett and members of his government. But the security in Jerusalem itself is very high, also around Israel's borders, because we've had Hamas intervening, saying that they will, you know, rally the forces in order to protect Al-Aqsa and to protect Jerusalem, as if though this is a kind of some sort of an attack on the Al-Aqsa that will somehow remove the rights of Muslims to come to the Temple Mount and to pray at Al-Aqsa. Of course, that is all just a war speak, because that will not be the case at all. But Hamas are just using it as a rallying point. We understand from some reports reports that there have been an increased number of Iron Dome units that have been deployed in order to perhaps guard us against the possibility of further missile attacks. There have been threats of incendiary balloons. There have been threats of all kinds of things. So this is really a big deal today. And I just pose the question again, as we did last time, you know, is all of this worth it? Do we really need to assert our authority over the city of Jerusalem in this way? Are there other ways of doing it? Do we back down? Is it considered to be weakness if we don't go ahead with it? Would it just not be more sensible to do something a little bit quieter in order to somehow preserve the borders and to preserve the peace around? You know, these Absolutely. Are the questions which we throw out there, and I don't know what the answers are really.
Yeah, and I certainly don't either. It is 8 o'clock. I'd love your answers. 345-19 or 061-895-1019. In principle, do you think that the flag march should go ahead today or not? I really think that is, and if you say no, it could mean simply that there are other ways to connect with the city of Jerusalem.